You are listening to The Lift Mindset, where we provide an update from the experts.
For our podcast today, we have special guest Stephen Snowden, Head of Fixed Income at Artemis Investment Management. He will be answering Dan Thompson's questions about the dramatic movements seen in bond markets over the past few weeks and how the current political uncertainty has affected it all. This podcast does not constitute as advice.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the October investment update on Lift Invest. This month, I've set up something slightly different to usual, and I'm joined by a special guest, Stephen Snowden, who is head of fixed income at Artemis. He also runs the corporate bond strategy, which we invest in through our models. So, Stephen, can you provide a little bit of an insight into your background and your history in the industry?
Sure. Thanks, Dan. I started in 1994, first 4 years of my career. I actually worked on equities. I made the move to corporate bonds in 1998 and have been running corporate bond funds in the public arena since the year 2000. Over 22 years of experience of running funds. I'm one of the most experienced managers in the space. The chaps that are a bit older than me have either retired or are on the verge of retiring. There are a few chaps coming up behind. I'll soon probably be the old man of the industry.
Are you still enjoying yourself, Stephen?
Yeah, I think what's probably unusual about me is that I left university on the Friday and I started as a trainee analyst stroke fund manager on the Monday morning. So this was in the era before credit was easy to get to and it was trendy for students and graduates to go to Thailand and find themselves on the beach for a few months. So there wasn't the same culture of being able to swan around on a diet of debts before you became an adult. I needed the money and I needed to start working. Despite being 50 years of age, I have over 28 years of experience now. So I mightn't be the oldest one out there, but I'm getting close to one of the most experienced guys in my field.
So perfect time to be speaking to you, really, given all the events politically which have had an influence upon bond markets in particular over the last couple of weeks. We're recording this on the day that we have a new PM. Rishi Sunak's just been appointed by the King and has done his first conference. He's spoken all about mistakes have been made, referring to Truss's short-lived government. Have you any insight or describe those mistakes in any more detail?
I think in the spirit of fairness, if I were a member of a political party and I was a member of the Conservative Party, I would have overwhelmingly have voted for Rishi Sunak on the first occasion. I felt he was the right person for the job. I feel that the Conservative Party made the same mistake that the Labour Party made several years ago. The Labour Party brought in Jeremy Corbyn. The Labour Party got somebody who made the Labour Party feel good. The Conservative Party got somebody who made the Conservative Party feel good, be that Boris Johnson or Liz Truss. The problem is that real-life pragmatism in politics would suggest the more middle path is a more sensible one. Whenever you elect a leader that is appealing to one cohort of society, then it's unlikely to be a successful one. But to be fair to Liz Truss, if you think of her ideology rather than how she went about it, it is true that when you look globally, the fastest growing nations are the ones that have a low tax regime and a smaller state. Where, however, it fell down is one major issue, and that is that when you are in debt, you have to be nice to the people who lend you money. And the UK, like many developed nations, is in a lot of debt and needs to raise a lot more debt. And what Liz Truss did was to call her, what she now calls her mini budget, but at the time she described it as a fiscal event. By describing it a fiscal event, it allowed her to evade the legal requirement for the OBR, the Office of Budget Responsibility, to provide a report on her economic plan. They also had sacked a senior civil servant at the Treasury. So with this poor corporate governance, the bond market or the lenders were already nervous. And then they came out with a tax cutting plan, which was entirely unfunded, which then led to a very violent rejection of that plan by the bond market. What happened thereafter, though, wasn't entirely her fault. What we know now from all crises is that there's leverage or a pinch point somewhere in the market. Last time around, it was the banking sector. You go back 20 years ago, it was tech and telecom. You go back 25 years ago, it was emerging markets. And if you go back to 1995, it was Barings Bank. Every sort of major crisis has a different engine to it. On this occasion, it turned out to be pension funds. And little did we know how much leverage was being employed by pension funds via LDI, liability-driven investment. In the backdrop of a weak government bond market, because inflation has been high and interest rates have been going up. The Liz Truss government gave that a bit of acceleration and pushed yields higher. That triggered margin calls by the pension funds, which then forced them to back sell bonds to hand over the cash and margin. That selling of the bonds created more of a selling dynamic in the bond market, which required even more margin calls. And so the death spiral went on. To be fair to Liz Truss, I have not seen anything written or heard anything spoken by anybody 6 weeks ago that would have said that pension fund industry would have entered into a death spiral of liquidity and forced selling of bonds. And that's what happened. So Liz Truss cannot be blamed for that. She did create the conditions for that to happen, but nobody really understood the scale of the impact. The Bank of England then came in, rescued the bond market, and then what we know from that, the government is replaced with Rishi Sunak. So we've now got two grown-ups in the room. It looks like Jeremy Hunt will remain as Chancellor. That will be taken well by the market. Rishi is seen as very clever, capable, and very economically astute. Again, the market likes that. So we're past the worst of the crisis for sure. The government still has a huge challenge ahead of it, but the danger that the market was in only a matter of weeks ago has thankfully passed.
Right. So the Trussonomic rulebook of reducing taxes to fund the growth outlook, which she was hoping for, Rishi clearly will be pursuing a different tack. Is the only positive outcome for markets simply time, that if he just sticks firm to his tiller, will that gradually improve market sentiment and returns for bonds? Or is there a risk that Rishi won't do enough in terms of turning off those fiscal easing taps, which Truss so quickly had turned on?
Let's see what the budget next week will bring. What the Office of Budget Responsibility report will bring. It's going to be very difficult to close the funding gap. What, however, is radically different, but I do believe the bond market will forgive the new government a degree of a funding gap for this reason, because they know they have a razor-like focus on making sure that funding gap is closed. A broader, more holistic point is simply this. We have been running a very large budget deficit for a very, very long period of time in the developed world and the UK. Politics has moved very populist. What I mean by that is that the electorate have no ambition to live within their means. They want to consume more public services than they're willing to pay for it. So we have this permanent funding gap or a permanent budget deficit where we raise less tax than we spend on public services. Now, you get away with that as long as the economy is growing, because the growth fills the hole of the funding gap. The problem we get to is whenever you've been running a very large budget deficit for a very long period of time, and then you've got a colossal budget deficit with COVID, for example, then your debt gets even bigger and your debt service starts to increase. And as a result of that, you can't invest as much in your economy, that it gets harder and harder to close that funding gap with growth. Given the situation that the new government has inherited, it is unlikely that they will be able to close that funding gap. But they do have the credibility to clearly display to the markets that they feel that they will close that funding gap.
So you mentioned, you know, the cost of funding this debt. Now, clearly, you know, yields are an indication of how much that cost will be, and that's increased. I mean, we'll come on to it, but, you know, have you ever seen these moves before in your decade in the industry? Given that cost of funding those debts, does that mean now Rishi is going to have to go even further than he was if Truss had never been elected? Is he going to have to go further just to try and get the markets on side and get back to now what seem like very positive levels of yields that were far lower than the current levels?
And to answer your question of have I ever seen anything like it, no. Is simple answer. That's in my first crisis or market collapse was what was happening in Japanese equities and Barings Bank in 1995. And there's been a myriad of different crises. And as I said at the top, everyone has a slightly different engine. I would never have predicted that the next crisis would be in the gilt market. Now, we have to remember that the dominant bull markets in the world, from a safety point of view, are US Treasuries and German bonds. But until about a month ago, you would have also said UK gilts. I firmly believe the UK gilt market can regain that status in time, largely because we have our own currency and therefore we're in control of our own destiny. But damage has been done and it will take a long time for that reputation to be fully healed. So if you look at a very major German publication, Friday or Saturday last week, the front page had a picture of a cartoon of Big Ben, like a banana. So clearly the insinuation that the UK had become a banana republic. Now that is overstating the issue, but it does show the reputational damage. The lasting damage has been done. Rishi Sunak will have to do more to repair that damage. That damage can be repaired. We're already seeing an extremely positive reaction by the markets. We have a very credible government in place. But look, no, I've absolutely never seen anything like one of the three dominant government bond markets in the world going into a death spiral of liquidity and despair. Yes, I've seen equity markets collapse. Yes, I've seen credit markets collapse, but never what would have been described up until a month ago, a flight to quality asset, which had been the UK gilt market. So that in itself was one of the most unique market sell-offs of all time.
The last time I saw you, Stephen, was in your offices the day after the Bank of England had to intervene in shoring up the gilt market. Now, clearly that intervention was very much unplanned, but necessary. At least I would say it was necessary. Perhaps you have a different view. But do you think that there will potentially be more steps taken by the Bank of England to shore up markets? And do you think that there are some sides of our industry that say, you know, it's quantitative easing again in sheep's clothing? Would you argue that they will stick to their quantitative tightening plans, or does this put pay to some of those plans?
Never is a long time, so none of us can predict the future. What I can say is I'm pretty confident that the Bank of England will not need to intervene. But we need to be clear what the Bank of England did a couple of weeks ago. It's not quantitative easing. As such, it was a market stabilisation programme. There's two sides to the Bank of England. The one that we see most often is the Monetary Policy Committee, the guys who set interest rates, monetary policy, and we hear from them 10 times a year. So they're very frequently in front of people's consciousness. The other side of the Bank of England is thankfully something we see very rarely, and that's the financial stability side, or I should say the lender of last resort. They are the ones that are there, theoretically, to stop banks from going bust, providing lending to banks. That side of the business or the bank was found wanting in 2007 and 2008, and it was a slow learner then. But on this occasion, the lender of last resort proved not to be required by the banks, proved to be required by the pension funds and therefore the gilt market. So it wasn't quantitative easing, because that's a monetary policy tool, but they were buying gilts as a buyer of last resort to bail out pension funds and the gilt market. In the end, they didn't really buy that many. I haven't seen the full figure. I think it's around about £11 billion out of a programme that was 65. Will they need to do that again? I think it's highly unlikely, because we have to bear in mind just how ill-conceived the fiscal event, as they called it, or the mini-budget by Quasi-Quartani and Liz Truss was. And we have to also remember that the extremely high degree of credibility Rishi Sunak has, and Jeremy Hunt has now earned since he has become Chancellor of the Exchequer. Quantitative tightening, I should say, is still continuing. So today, maybe they paused it for a couple of weeks, but today the Bank of England sold corporate bonds back into the market, and they'll be selling more tomorrow. Quantitative tightening on the gilt side will kick off again at the very end of October, start of November. Now, they have moderated what they're doing. That is true. Now, is there a chance that the Bank of England will have to intervene at some point in the future? Yes, that chance remains. Do I think it's probable? The answer is no. In fact, I would say it's quite a remote possibility.
Given what you've just said, it would, I think, be quite a good time just to explain the relationship between the corporate bond market, which clearly is the mandate to which your fund that we buy for our clients is mandated to, and the government bond market. Has the past relationship broken down at all? And not only given the political backdrop, but through the course of this year, has there been any deviation between those two segments of the bond market?
Both aspects have fallen, and both was accelerated by the mini budget. The corporate bond has its basic two elements. There's the underlying government bond element or the gilt element, and then there's the additional yield you get for the credit risk of a company, which theoretically is most often not a riskier lending prospect than the government. So we call that additional yield the spread, corporate bond spread or credit spread. So what we have seen this year is a rise in yield on government bonds. And at the same time, we've also seen a widening of that credit spread as people's perception of risk or a slowing economy has increased. A slower economy leads to potentially business failures and a higher likelihood of default. That risk premium increases. So what we've seen this year, credit spreads widening and government bond yields increasing. So all in yield on a in corporate bonds. Started the year just over 2%. The yield on the corporate bond index peaked at just over 7%, and it's now come back to about 6.25% is off the peak. But yes, what happened in the mini budget hurt both things. Pension funds had to liquidate assets rapidly to pay their margins on their derivative contract. That forced them to sell pretty much anything they could. That was gilts, index-linked gilts, equities, and corporate bonds. The one thing that we can thank the previous government for, while it wasn't done intentionally, they have created yields much higher and much healthier than they otherwise would have been. So this has provided us a buying opportunity to buy an asset much cheaper than it otherwise should or would have been.
One reason that we are buying your fund is clearly because we believe in active management. We have got conviction in the views that you hold and the way that you are trading your positions within the fund. You know, I thought you may be able to give us insights into the macro picture that you're seeing and whether there are any dislocations on a bond by bond basis at all that you're taking advantage of.
Yeah, the economic situation, I would say, is pretty good for the bond market. Not necessarily good for society, but I think it's on the whole it's pretty good for the bond market. The risk up front quite clearly is the fact there's large budget deficit. The government has to borrow a lot of money. They have to issue a lot of bonds. And like anything, if there's a lot of it available, then it's going to be very hard for the price to be strong. So we've got that in the backdrop. That's the big risk. But that said, we have to bear in mind the economic growth is tailing off. Obviously, we have very high inflation and that is hurting consumption or the ability of people to buy stuff. So a slowing economic environment is typically good for the bond market because that typically starts to moderate inflation. And it is true that right now, today, inflation is very high. It's over 10%. But that is forecast to fall dramatically next year. And that's a positive for the bond market. A slowing economy is not necessarily good for the economic business environment and therefore the health of company balance sheets. But from an investment-grade corporate bond point of view, these are mostly very large organisations with very strong balance sheets. They're very rarely robust. The risk premium that's attached to these at the moment is incredibly high and providing a very good valuation opportunity. So I would say, holistically, it's a very good opportunity to buy corporate bonds at a good price. More idiosyncratically within the market, I think there's really good opportunities, particularly for actively managed funds. One of the side effects of quantitative easing has been over the last 10 to 12 years is that when it was going on, you know, government bonds were being bought, corporate bonds were being bought. That put the prices up. That made other assets, relatively speaking, look attractive, like equities. We've actually had inflation for a very long time because of QE, but it wasn't inflation in the price of bread or milk. It was asset price inflation. We had that for a decade. Now that QE has stopped and we've now got quantitative tightening, we've seen equities come down, we've seen bonds come down, we've seen valuations improve dramatically. That's very good for active managers because there's now a greater degree of discrimination within the market. When we had QE and rising markets, within reason, everything went up in price. So the differentiation between a good company and a bad company wasn't that great because if you had a position that you didn't like and you wanted to sell, you could always sell it to the central bank because they were just buying everything. Now we don't have that magic big brother out there anymore with the safety net to look after us in case something goes wrong. You're going to see a much greater degree of discrimination in the market. So I think if you're looking forward, we're looking at a market where the difference between the winners and losers in the corporate world will be much greater than they have been. And I think that plays perfectly into the hands of active managers.
You mentioned earlier there are two components to the returns of corporate bonds, one of which being the yield that government bonds provide and relatedly the path that interest rates from the Bank of England take. The expectations on a forward-looking basis are that the Bank of England will continue to raise rates relatively quickly. If you were to follow markets, then clearly the pressures of increasing rates has only been added to in recent weeks. How does Bank of England square the circle with there being, you know, a potentially poorer economic outlook, whilst at the same time the market's very much calling for them to increase interest rate along kind of market lines?
We could talk for a couple of hours on the Bank of England in isolation and whether they have done a good job or not. Look, they still have to put up interest rates. Why do they need to do that? Well, the employment market is incredibly robust. We can see that by a myriad of strikes. People feel very confident about retaining their job, and if they do lose their job, being able to. And the numbers have changed somewhat, but roughly speaking, there are as many job vacancies in the UK as there are unemployed people. So at the minute, we have a situation where employees have the power over the employer, and that is leading to wage inflation and will push inflation forward. So unless the Bank of England takes some of the demand out of the economy by putting up interest rates, we will end up in this perennial and perpetual inflationary backdrop. What does that mean for the bond market, though? Yes, there are interest rates coming, hikes coming, probably go from 2.25% at the moment to 3% very shortly. But what is already priced into the market? The market is currently pricing that base rates in the UK will peak at over 5%. I sincerely believe that we will not get close to that level. I think mortgage affordability and the impact that would have on the housing market and the confidence falling house prices would have on consumption in the UK would be severe, and economic growth would slow down quite dramatically, and that would bring inflation down rapidly. Inflation is a problem today. Yes, the Bank of England have to put up interest rates even into a slowing environment, but they have to slow the environment to slow inflation. But the quantum of interest rates priced into the bond market at the minute is excessive and provides a very strong valuation backdrop or support to the bond market. The bond market has considerable room to recover from what currently trades.
And when you talk about the market expectations regarding interest rates versus your own views, now clearly in your active fund, you're able to not only take a view regarding the credit selections of different bonds, but you're also able to make a view on kind of how much duration being the exposure to changes in yields. Is that positioning changing at all? And have you made any changes in recent weeks or months?
We had been running a short duration position since December 2020. What I mean by short duration is we felt that government bond yields would increase, and as a result, we had taken less interest rate risk exposure. So our fund would be more protected against the rise in interest rates and the rise in government bond yields. That has proven to be extremely successful. You know, when the market broke down dramatically post the fiscal event or mini budget, we substantially moderated that negative bet on the government bond market to the point that we have practically no bet on the government bond market. And so we're not taking a positive bet on it, we're not taking a negative bet on it. We've had a very good reaction to the bond market. First bit of good news is the Bank of England stabilising things. The second bit of good news is quasi-quartan getting sacked. The third bit of good news was Liz Truss resigning. The fourth bit of good news is Rishi Sunak being appointed. These are all been very good news events. This has led to a recovery to a degree of the bond market. That probably has some direction still to go. There's room for more recovery. But depending on the strength of that recovery will depend on that bet on yields. But as things stand, very comfortable with yields in the gold market.
So do you think that short term, the markets will be led more by political stability? Do you think that it will be more related to kind of economics and kind of earnings? Will it be impacted at all by there being broadly more positive sentiment in market participants at all?
The big event in the UK we have is the Office of Budget Responsibilities report coming at the end of the month and the new budget. But the market's already expecting something quite sensible. Given that we have two grown-ups now running the economy, that should happen. Something that the market has taken its eye off, in my humble opinion, because there's been so much political chaos and huge volatility of the government bonds, is that very, very quietly behind the scenes, if you actually look at European gas prices, they have come down dramatically. Why is that? Well, we all know why they spiked because of war, because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and then Russia bit by bit turning off the gas pipes.
Just to put a figure on that, so I ran it this morning, that if you look at the benchmark price for Dutch natural gas, then it's down 48% since the end of September. That macro point regarding inflation and the impact that has on central banks' interest rates, you know, it's clearly been a huge story throughout this year. We've very much, Stephen, been positioning for, when you look at the States, you know, three consecutive months of inflation coming down. Obviously, there's been volatility around those prints, but still the trajectory now does seem to be one which is less inflationary than it has been earlier this year.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, gas prices have been coming down largely unnoticed by many people. That bodes very well for inflation. Inflation has been surprising to the upside all year, but now with gas prices having rolled over considerably, and we're starting to see retail sales rolling over, we're starting to see the balance between unemployed people and job vacancies moderating a little. All these things are proving to be very positive for the rolling over of inflation. So I would say, if looking over the next few weeks ahead, let's get this new mini budget out and the Office of Budget Responsibility report out. But I really think there'll be renewed focus on gas prices. And if we get a mild winter, and it is possible, then you'll see inflation roll over very quickly. If we get a harsh winter, not so. Mathematically, inflation is going to roll over. I think it's important for people to bear in mind inflation is price of goods today compared to where they were exactly a year ago. By definition, a year from now, the base number of extraordinarily elevated gas prices will be the base number, and then we'll be looking at whatever the gas price is in 12 months time. It could be higher, it could be more. Balance probability is it's going to be substantially lower. So we could be looking at a year's time, very low inflation. So I actually think, to my mind, about what's going to drive market sentiment near term, I think more and more people are going to be looking at the gas price and realising perhaps the worst is behind us.
You've painted quite an optimistic outlook for not only bonds, but also for investment markets more broadly. I don't know if you kind of had any closing comments before we finish.
Yeah, at the start of the year, the average yield on a corporate bond in the UK was just over 2%. Today, it's about 6.25%. Goes up and down every day, but roughly that dynamic. At 6.25% yield, companies need to think really carefully about whether they want to borrow money for 5, 10, 20, 30 years at that yield or that coupon. That makes them really think, do I invest in that piece of plant and machinery? Do I pay that dividend? Do I buy back my shares? What I'm saying is when the yield is in excess of 6%, companies will issue less debt and they will probably pay smaller dividends and perhaps do less share buyback. So the supply of debt comes down, supply of corporate bonds come down. With yields being this high, then people like them, multi-asset investors, lots of people start to buy them because yield a lot. Now, right here, right now, the yield on a corporate bond is lower than inflation. A year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, as it goes on, the yield on our fund is roughly 7%. Inflation a year from now is probably going to be, looking forward for 12 months, 3%, maybe 4% of the push. And then the year after that, lower again. So if you're buying bonds today, over a medium to long term, you are beating inflation by buying bonds today. And that's going to bring people into the market to buy. As if companies don't issue the debt at this expensive level, less supply, more demand. I think the balance of probabilities is our corporate bond market does well from this point going forward. I think this is one of the few opportunities you get in an asset class like bonds to buy at compelling valuations.
That's been really insightful. Thank you very much, Stephen.
You're welcome, Dan.
Thank you for listening. We hope you have learned something new today from our experts. If you would like to find out more, please visit our website, www.lift-invest.com, or search for Lift-Invest on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Don't forget to like and subscribe to hear more from the Lift Mindset.